All right, people, I need a go, no-go for the Geek News Central podcast. Digital archive recorders.
We're go fly.
Microphone.
We're go fly.
Video feed.
Go.
Web browser.
Go.
RSS data stream aggregator.
Go fly.
Interflux Toddism suppressor.
All right, I'm confused.
Host readiness check.
Welcome to the show. Welcome to the show.
The Geek News Central podcast is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are ready to go. Cue Todd in...
Five.
Button, who's got the button?
Four.
There is no cause for alarm.
Three.
Everybody hold on to something.
Two.
Just press the button.
One.
It's showtime.
Welcome to episode 1099 of the Geek News Central podcast. It's Monday, March 7th, and you're listening. You are listening to the Geek News Central podcast, sponsored in part by GoDaddy.com. And listeners just like you. Great deals from GoDaddy can be found at geeknewscentral.com/GoDaddy, or you can support the show today at geeknewscentral.com/insider, or just paypal.me/geeknews. You can always pick up Ohana gear at cafepress.com/Ohana store. Everyone, welcome to the show. God, I got a great one for you tonight. Lots of stuff to share. Big, big warm welcome to all of the Ohana. And it's been an absolutely amazing couple of days. I just got to tell you straight up, it was a good weekend. I relaxed. I needed a little bit of a break. It's been nonstop really since January. And it was good just to kind of veg this weekend. And so for those of you that know me, you know this is kind of a weird a weird thing to happen, but it was nice to take a little bit of a break. And I actually was kind of dreading coming into the studio tonight, but it was just, hey, one of those days, show's got to go on, right? but that's not what the new listeners want to hear, that's for sure. But if you're brand new to the show, hey, thanks for checking us out. Sure to entertain here. And take some time to get over to geeknewscentral.com and subscribe to the show, either on iTunes or via Android or via email or via the RSS feed. And if you don't know what any of those mean, don't worry. You can click on Android if you're an Android user. Click on iTunes if you're an iOS user. And if you don't have either one of those devices, just click on the more subscription options or by email. That way you'll get subscribed to the show. And that's the most important thing today, is that's your number one mission as a new listener, is to get subscribed. So that way you never miss a single episode. It'll be right there in your device with you. And that's the beauty of podcasting. You can listen on demand. But, of course, lots of stuff going on in geeknewscentral.com. The writers have been busy. We'll talk about that here in a second. But don't forget, there's a newsletter on the website. You get signed up for that as well. The newsletter really is kind of it's a misnomer. It's really not a newsletter. It's more of an announcement list. And basically, I send out an email immediately following the show that has every link to every content, or every piece of content I talk about. So that's going to be available. And so don't miss out on signing up for the newsletter. If those of you that are watching, I've got a light that is on the fritz, and it's been driving me crazy because it keeps changing the brightness of it. So I'm afraid one of my lights I've had in here for ages is on its way out. Not a good sign. It's an LED light, but I noticed today when I came in, it was really, really hot. It was like at 40 steps of intensity, higher than it should have been. And I made the adjustment. For those of you watching, if you see a flash in here, that's because of that light. But we'll get to the bottom of what's going on, get it down off, get it cleaned up. But something is amiss. And it keeps throwing me off when it does what it's doing. So just be aware of that for those of you that are watching. Hey, if you want to reach out to the show, geeknews@gmail.com, or you can follow me, obviously, on Twitter at geeknews. And again, geeknews@gmail.com. You can watch the show on the Roku, on Apple TV. You can tell Alexa to basically listen to the latest edition of the Geek News Central podcast. You can listen on Stitcher. You can watch or listen on Blueberry. course, all of our partner shows here, We're No Better Than Average with Jacob and Jeff, Health Tech Weekly with Jamie Davis, The Gadget Professor, Mr. Don Bain. We've got The Elder Divide with Todd Ani, the Pro Gear site being taken care of by the GNC writing team. So all that's all the places you can visit on the website. Really, there's content there for days. So don't miss out. And of course, my team continues to crank out great content on the website. Lots of product reviews. Get your geek on over here again at geeknewscentral.com. Lots of stuff that you're going to want to bust your credit card out for and pick up. So don't miss all the greatest stuff that's being written on the website at geeknewscentral.com. Of course, this show is sponsored in part by our good friends at GoDaddy.com. Got to be just honest with you. GoDaddy's mainstay of the show here. Long, long time supporter. We've actually been in talks, too. And well, let me get through the GoDaddy piece. But, you know, GoDaddy's been putting together and providing great hosting services for years. And I've just joined what they're calling their advisory committee. Now, I don't know how many people are in the advisory committee, but we're going to start getting ability to provide feedback to GoDaddy on their products and services. They're going to give us information about new product releases and so forth. So as you're a listener of the show and many of you have used the GoDaddy products and services, we want you to, or I want you to, I shouldn't say we, when I say we, the family, I want you to email me and just let me know. If you've had a problem, if there's something you'd like to see, if something's driving you crazy, there was something you wish they had, I'll be able to provide that data information back to the team at GoDaddy. So a little bit of a development there. But hey, all my specials can be found at geeknewscentral.com/GoDaddy. You can find all the codes that are on the website. Basically, we've got this running the same deals right now, 30% off of new product purchases, 99cent.coms. You can get $1 a month economy of hosting, managed WordPress hosting, or their website builder. Again, $1 a month for 12 months. All those offers include a free domain. So if you want to experiment a little bit with a website, you can do that for $12. What a deal for a year. If it works out, renew it. And then and grow it. If it doesn't work out, you don't get enough traction in a year, well, you've got a small amount of money invested in it. So all my codes start with CJC, then followed by GNC. It would be WP1, 1HS, GOT, 99, 30. So CJC, GNC, 30. Again, all those codes, just click the link on the website at geeknewscentral.com/GoDaddy. Tell all your friends, neighbors, people that you know. Share those codes. I most graciously appreciate it when you do that. There the thing goes again. You guys didn't see it. Driving me crazy. Ah, something is amiss. Oh, those of you listening, you could care less, but I'm trying to figure out what it's doing. Ah, and nothing more annoying than a light flash. Oh, man. All right, let me roll down the list here. You know, I started working on the, you know, with some podcasters, working on trying to revamp the podcast awards. And, you know, I've been very upfront, having to potentially raise about $25,000, increase the advertising rates this year, did a number of things. We're going to be adding a GoFundMe page. And then some individual had the gumption to basically say, I'm just filling my pockets. And how soon I forgot on how people could be, if they only knew the truth. And it's comments like that individual's that makes me want to reconsider retaking up the charge for the podcast awards, to be honest with you. It just blows me away to think that they think I'm going to be filling my pocket there. It's just, if they only knew, And we're going to do some transparent accounting on the website so that people will see, you know, what it's going to, what's costing, and all those factors, so that people can be reassured that I'm not just filling my pockets. anyway, we'll talk more about that here in a couple of weeks. The live streaming platform, I think we've made a decision. I'm just waiting on some paperwork now. And it's probably going to be a month or so before we announce who our new partner is and bringing this new offer to the podcasting space. But have definitely picked a new streaming partner, and we're excited about being able to finally now kind of move forward and put the logistics in place. So that's going to happen. And as I said at the beginning of the show, I kind of took a little bit of a break this weekend, vegged out, got a good book, read for a while, did go to my kid's soccer game, and just kind of took it easy. Every once in a while, I just need that. CPA called and said I can come by and pick up the first stack of paperwork for the IRS. So that's all ready, and that's, you know, almost afraid to see what the tax damage is going to be this year. But this is the first step, and then my wife and I submit ours, and then we'll know what the total, how deep Uncle Sam is going to reach into my wallet this year. But it's already starting to get prepared for NAB. We're a little over a month away from that event. I got to get some airline tickets booked. I've got hotels already set, I think. I don't have it for my California stop, but I'll get all that put in place. So lots going on. At the same time, made a decision. This is more logistically for the show. You guys really probably won't see anything. But the TriCaster that I've been running right now, the 860, is now 2-3 years at least. Been running fine, not causing any problems. But I've just got a... you know, up to this point, I've been upgrading every 2-3 years, get a brand new machine. So I reached out to my new tech dealer and said, okay, what's the story? Should I jump to the 8,000? And he said, no, you just need to do the software upgrade. And then I'm like, well, what about the support of this thing? What's going to happen? You know, are they going to continue? That thing is driving me nuts. You guys can see it in the video, I'm sure. So I said, what are we going to do? And he said, well, maybe it's time to put an extended warranty on it. I said, I can do that. So it looks like probably that's the, you know, instead of, because the upgrade to get to the next machine, which really I don't have room for, and because of the switching unit being bigger on the desk and the software upgrade almost giving me everything. Now, just think about this for a second. So the software upgrade is like $1,500. The hardware upgrade was $20,000. So easy choice, right? Buy the software upgrade and pay for the warranty. I can pay, I can do a lot of years on extended warranty instead of spending $20,000 for the next machine. And I really don't need it. So, so that good move from the dealer telling me what to do. And we'll see what comes out of NAB. But for now, I'm going to stick with the same hardware. We're going to do a software upgrade, and that's going to give me some new abilities. So it should be curious to see how that works out. But anyway, that's what's going on here, just from a administrative standpoint. But I knock on wood. You know, everything's up, running. I'm not looking any hardware failures. I'm continuing to knock on wood here. So the studio's doing good, minus this light over here. And I'm beginning to wonder if it's not the light, but the filter. Oh, no, it's the... I'm looking at it right now. I know you guys don't care. It's... yeah, something is amiss. But it keeps flashing at me, and it's... drive me crazy. I'm almost willing to go over there and just pull the plug on it. But let's go ahead and get into the content tonight. I got a good stack of stuff for you. So what I want to start off with is an article that, I know I was going to tell you. I've been working with a vendor, and by the time you hear the next show, I'm going to have some new offers available. And these are some offers that I worked with a vendor that are going to be specifically tailored, according to the vendor, to this audience. So we're going to rotate them, I think, once a week. But I'm going to have a special landing page for those offers. I'll have some information again on the next show to share with you about it. I did not get them up tonight and get a chance to get it implemented. So looking forward to be able to introduce that to you on show 1100. Crazy, yeah, that we're there? But anyway, next show. All right, so let's talk just a little bit here about email. Just a few days ago, Ray Tomlinson, widely credited as the inventor of email, passed away. He was 74 years old. By all accounts, this gentleman was a brilliant man. He was involved in the ARPANET in the very, very early days in the 70s of the beginning of the internet. He, much to the chagrin of the Department of Defense, was not happy when he developed some of the mail protocols that were being used in the very early days of the internet. Him and a few other gentlemen really kind of refined it. But let's think about someone's impact on the world. And I can't think, you know, I never met the man, but let's be honest. How cool is it to have a legacy that you are the guy that created email? Now, probably some of you hate email, but, you know, I live and breathe by it. Another application I'm living and breathing by right now a lot is Slack, and we'll talk a little bit about online messaging here in a few minutes. But if we really think about the overall impact that email has had on all our lives, it's really incredible. It really, really is. And if I think back, though, and let me just kind of, and I've shared this a number of times, and many of you that are bulletin board operators, you'll know what I'm talking about, or one of you that maybe got on BBSs back in the day. So in the 84 to 87, 88, the 89, and again, if I'm off by a couple of years, sue me. But, you know, when I started running my bulletin board when I was living in Lemoore, California, again, that would have been the 89 time frame, I guess. About the time I would have got started. Matter of fact, we were at 2,400 baud. Actually, my first modem was 1,200 baud. Moving to 2,400 was awesome. Then we got all the way up to 56K before the internet came along. But, I ran a Wildcat bulletin board for years. And we had this, essentially it was like email, except it wasn't instantaneous. If you wanted to write someone a message, you could do that. And if the person lived on any other side of the world, it would take a couple of days to get to the person and a couple of days to get back. It would eventually get back to you. So it was fantastic. As faster, you know, I thought it was, you know, amazing. I could, you know, remember this was the day of very expensive long distance phone calls. It was the day of, you know, there was no cell phones. It was still letter time. People were still writing letters. Because picking up the phone was ungodly expensive. And, you know, it was starting to get cheaper. I think probably by the early 90s, it was maybe down to 10 cents a minute. But still, not necessarily inexpensive in those times to make long-distance phone calls. And, you know, when your phone bill was under a couple hundred bucks, you were pretty happy. So we had this thing called FidoNet where we had message forums, kind of like Google Groups or Google Communities, and we spent hours reading the messages and participating in the flame boards and all kinds of great stuff. And then I remember when I went to Guam in 91 and, was running my board over there, and I bought my first domain name, Hafidai.com, And matter of fact, I'm getting ready to lease Hafadai.com to a gentleman in Guam who's been more than patient with me getting that turned, you know, set up for him. But, you know, that was the first domain I bought and did email on. And when I bought, did email, it still was like, and the way we were doing it was crazy. It was, it's amazing stuff got from point A to point B. But, so in the 90s, you know, I didn't get email until, again, 90, maybe two, something in that, you know, that range. And, it was fantastic because then, I knew that it was a little more private, even though it took a little longer to get back and forth. I was able to communicate with my parents. It was just amazing. It really, really was. And you think how far we've come today. Now it's just part of our lives. You know, you're on Gmail, you use Outlook, but, you know, whatever you use for email, and it dictates our lives, you know, a lot. A bunch of business gets done via email. So, you know, sad to see this gentleman pass away. But wow, oh wow, did he not change him and a few other fellas? Did they not change the world in a big, big way? And just to think that this all really got it kicked off in 1971 was when, you know, really the first emails were being sent. They assumed that you could only have 72 characters per line. And a maximum of 66 lines. And it went very, very slow in those early days. And what they found out was that even in the early days, about 70% of the packet traffic that was going on the ARPANET was email. And email was largely the reason that it there was DoD drove for ARPANET to be separated from MILNET. They wanted to, you know, basically, they made that split, and it was largely because of, the amount of email traffic going on. Okay. So anyway, lots of history here. I'll have that link up, for you in the show notes to check out. Next story I want to talk about is, you know, we're getting back into Apple announcement season. And we already know that Apple's potentially planning a March event. So what do we know is coming? Well, we're pretty sure that there's going to be a new 4-inch iPhone, particularly called the SE, that will be announced. It's more than likely that there's going to be the iPad Air 3 that will be announced as well. It's going to have a 9.7-inch, or going to be a 12.9-inch model or a 9.7. Probably both. The Apple Watch 2 is more than likely going to be announced, starting at $349. The iPhone 7, again, the 4-inch iPhone 7, is a potential that they're working on. Maybe won't be announced this go-around. We know that the Apple TV 4 is in work, and that they are really trying to figure out how they're going to, you know, get more of you using it as a television. The iPad Mini 5, and of course iOS 10 will probably be announced. It's that time of year. Maybe even some new MacBooks with Sky Lake chips. Of course, the Apple cars potentially being worked on. So a lot of stuff going on. They predict, over at Apple. So we'll see what happens with the March announcements. But everyone's really excited about this 4-inch phone. You know, some folks think that the iPhones are too big, and, I know I love my iPhone 6. What have I got? A 6S. And, I have a 6. I got a straight 6. And I love my big iPhone. I mean, I wouldn't trade it for anything. I wouldn't go smaller for nobody, but I know a lot of you don't like carrying those big phones. So, we'll see on this new phone, but lots of speculation based upon some of the leaks that's been going on. So I should have talked about this right after the email. It tells you how much I had things organized tonight. But over the past year, I've been using a couple of different services, but my team right now is primarily working on Slack. And Slack, I think, has fundamentally changed how we've done business. And actually, what we came up with is our team is growing. So we came up with a communications matrix. When do you use Slack? When do you use email? When do you need to pick up the phone? You know, we basically have this matrix of a communication matrix, and it's really working out well, because what we're trying to do is, while Slack and these other messaging systems are fantastic, you have to really be restrictive and actually hold the line when it comes to topics. Now, for those of you that aren't familiar with what Slack does, is just imagine that you have channels. I'll give you an example. In our Slack channel, we've got board agenda, board dev chat, branding, development, event planning, finance, general marketing, partners, related technology, service features, tech support, random discussions, and then we can do individual, we can do one-on-one private chats with each other too. So you can set who's allowed into each of those channels based on the administrator saying, yep, you're allowed in here, and no, you can't be in this one. So what we're able to do here is I can communicate instantly with my team and put something out. For example, in the general category, we're having a meeting tomorrow, so someone wanted to be reminded of the call-in number, so I just dropped the telephone number in and the time, and it was basically an easy reminder to tell people, hey, remember about this, you know, we've set a calendar event to everyone, but here's the reminder. As far as marketing goes and blog post and, again, event planning, we all have these separate channels to work in, but sometimes the tech support channel, we're basically sharing information back and forth, and we're able to talk about things going on, customers having an issue or something we're seeing, and it really, what it does is it keeps everyone on the same page. But it's not good for multi-day, multi-month conversations. We open and close channels all the time. For example, if we got a project coming on, we'll put in a channel for that particular project. We'll work the project in that channel. Then we'll expire the channel after the project is done to kind of keep a cleanup. So this whole chat system is cool too, because you can search stuff and go back and remember we were talking about this and go and look for that link. It has cut down our superfluous email by just tons. So what's happening in corporations, though, is corporations are starting to figure out, as we did, is that there's positives and there's negatives to using these chat systems. The positive is, number one, you hash things out really, really quick. Number two, if there is like a red alert where we have to share critical information, quick, we can do that. Having fun. We have a little jet, you know, we have this random chat thing. We can kind of get in there and for a better word, shoot the bull. Now, my team's virtual, so we don't have water cooler time. So we have random chat sessions where we kind of talk about stuff and tease each other about football or baseball or basketball or whatever's going on. So it's a little bit of a fun to have an inside, basically a little bit of an inside channel that we can all kind of chat on. And number four, it's really about this team building thing. It's just, you know, everyone's getting the same information. It's not coming secondhand. If I have something to say, put it out for the whole group at one time. New hire announcements, changes in priorities, you know, everyone in it can explain why. And then people can kind of give debate or feedback and so forth. But one of the negatives of it, and this is something that a couple of our team members have challenges with, is they're already so overloaded with stuff, is that following group chats all day, if you don't limit the chatter, can really be mental fatiguing. And it also drives an ASAP now culture. So I find myself sometimes asking for something that I know in the back of my head will take a couple of days to get an answer back, but then I'm kind of waiting for that answer. So, and I think it drives people on the other side too. But you know, if I haven't been on chat for 3 or 4 hours, it's also, I have a fear, what did I miss? So I have to go back and look. And another thing it can impact negatively is thinking a line at a time rather than a thought at a time. And that's kind of how, you know, Twitter's impacting our society negatively. So we try to have deep discussions on stuff and even little, you know, skirmishes from time to time back and forth. But one thing it's for sure is that if you are even in questioning something, if you don't have a complete, like, are you sure you meant that? You can say, are you sure that's what you wanted to do? And you get that reply back, yes or no, I meant something else. But there's also times when there's pile-ons. Sometimes there's knee-jerk responses. You know, it's awful easy to, you know, type something up and hit send. And then you're like, oh, I shouldn't have done that. Email, oftentimes, you have a few more moments to think before you hit send. So sometimes there's not enough buffer of time in saying something. But again, and there's also over-informing. So we've tried, again, to set up this communication matrix of what we will do in chat, what we'll do in email, and what we'll do on phone. And for example, if I need something, like, and I really need it, and I've sent a message to someone in Slack, our rule of thumb is, and that person hasn't replied in 15 minutes, and you really need it, pick up the phone and call them and say, hey, I really need this, in case they've walked away from Slack, or, you know, it's not like you're looking at them. So this is a great article that's in signalvoice.com. And if you're thinking about using a messaging system, Campfire, or if you're thinking about using HipChat, or if you're thinking about using Slack, some good positive and negatives here. I still think the positives way, way, way outweigh the negatives when it comes to doing team building and that kind of stuff. So it just kind of hit home to me because we talked about a lot of this when we were in Chicago with my team meeting and talking about, you know, how the company's communication goes. And so much of it just, man, it really hit home. This is a great written up article for, again, for any of you that are using Slack as for team building. But it's also great. I use it for more than just, for example, I sent up a CES channel. All the CES team was in there. We are communicating while we're at the show. I have a Slack channel for all the GNC writers and podcasters. We've got a Slack channel for a research group that we ask questions of from time to time. So there's, you know, you can set them up for a very narrow reason or something very wide. I'm going to be setting one up for the podcast awards and having some discussion with podcasters in there. So it's just, it's cool in how we're communicating today. It might be with narrow groups, but it sure is amazing as compared to where we've come in the past. All right, so let me get into more news here. Verizon. Well, they've been slapped pretty hard by the FCC. Of course, they didn't get fined as much. They only have to pay $1.35 million as compared to AT&T, who had to pay $100 million. But Verizon can no longer share web activity with advertisers unless you opt in. So I don't remember being asked to opt in or opt out. But Verizon is basically been being naughty for setting these what they called super cookies that were tracking activity for advertisers to leverage. So if you're a Verizon user and you have not opted in, or you don't even know if you've opted out, it might be something for you to look at. So again, Verizon can no longer share your web activity with advertisers unless you opt in. Tomorrow, big day here in Honolulu, we're going to have a total solar eclipse. It's going to be very, very short. We're on the edge. So we're not going to get to see very much here. We will get a little bit of time. But we're going to be watching, of course, and seeing how it goes. But we're on the very edge. I think about 2 o'clock our time. HST is when it will get underway. So the weather's been beautiful here, so they should have a nice view of seeing the total solar eclipse. Also, if you are an old school guy, you used to have an Apple II, well, there's now a way to run 500 hard-to-find Apple II programs in your web browser. So this is cool. The Oregon Trail or the Prince of Persia, you know, if you endear to those types of programs or some obscure educational title, the Internet Archive has announced that its web-based emulation catalog includes over 500 relatively tough-to-find Apple II programs that might otherwise have disappeared forever. So this is cool that they're doing this. And, you know, I'd love to see someone do some sort of a emulator for bulletin board games that used to be played, too. I think that would be pretty awesome. How many of you are perfectionist? I am by far not a perfectionist. I strive to be a perfectionist, but I am not a perfectionist at all. But people that are perfectionist, there's a study out that says that they are perfectionism and burnout go hand in hand. And you know, perfection is often treated as a virtue, especially in the workplace. But research is showing that self-imposed pressure to perform flawlessly just leads to eventual burnout. Perfection simply isn't how you should measure success. And so if any of you have a perfectionist mindset and you find yourself becoming burned out, it's maybe because you're trying too hard. And so anyway, there's a good article here about this, talks about common fears, the psychology before it, feeling trapped at work and so forth. Boy, I know some people that are perfectionist and I know it affects them. So it's, you know, it's often interesting how life is mimicked by some of the stuff you read online anymore. You Linux users, you're going to laugh here. Microsoft SQL database software now runs on Linux. So SQL Server for Linux crosses one of the company's biggest taboos off its list. You remember for a while there, no way, no how was you know, SQL Server ever going to touch an open source project. Well, it has. So SQL Server for Linux will not ship until mid-2017, but there's already a preview for corporations that want to peek. And for any of you that are Linux users, you may be licking your lips in anticipation of this, but this is pretty cool. I know a lot of folks use SQL Server. You won't have to have a Windows machine to run it anymore. Over on The Verge, there's a great video of some dude that walked 20 miles to create a Game of Thrones snow art. It is incredible. Just going to give you the link. You watch the video. It's awesome. Now, why? Well, we're only 7 days away from the introduction of the new Game of Thrones. Are you excited as I am? I really, really am. Whose head's going to get chopped off next? So anyway, Game of Thrones is about ready to kick off again here in 7 days. I'm excited. I know you are too. It's one of the best series ever. Hear about the, all right, Mac users. So sorry here, but you have been hit with the first ever ransomware. You know, one of the longtime arguments that buying a Mac over PC has been security. Now, whether this was due to the fact that fewer people use Macs or because OS X was, you know, intrinsically more secure, is for out there for debate. But if you are using a product called Transmission and you updated, it was a BitTorrent application, version 2.9, apparently it contained some malware that infected your hard drive and encrypted your hard drive and asked for cache to unencrypt it. It didn't take too long for Apple to catch on, but the damage was already done. There was a number of people that were infected. Their volumes and user files were encrypted, and they had to pay the ransom in order to get their files to be unlocked. So if you are one of those people, and I'd love to hear from anyone in this audience that may have been affected there, if they knew someone, like to know what they end up paying to get out of jail from the particular ransomware. Seagate's got some issues. You know, just a week or so ago, a Snapchat employee was essentially talked into giving up some W-2s. Well, Seagate has also been the focus of another payroll phishing scheme. So all of the Seagate W-2s of current and former Seagate employees were forwarded to an outside non-authorized agent. So exposing U.S. employees of Seagate to potential tax fraud and identity theft. So this is number two. This is a big one. People pay attention. You know, you get an email asking you to do something out of the blue going somewhere. You know, you get on the phone, call the boss, make sure that that was an official request and not something that just got snuck through. And it was in probably would cost you your job, right? Wait, modified electric Corvette. This is a great video. You know, what guy or gal would not want to own a Corvette? Well, a modified all-electric Corvette claims new speed record of 186.8 miles per hour. They did it at the Kennedy Space Center on the runway and buckled up and achieved 186.8 miles per hour. Again, all-electric Corvette, setting a world record. And congratulations, very, very cool job done. All right, how many of you have flying on American using GoGo? Well, GoGo has bought more satellite capacity after a lawsuit from American Airlines over slow in-flight Wi-Fi. GoGo plans to offer up to 250 megabits per aircraft over yet-to-be-launched satellites from Intelsat and OneWeb. So really, if you think about 250 megs, that's an interesting number, that type of speed to each aircraft. That's a pretty good speed. I don't think they're getting that right now. It was the subject of a lawsuit that was dropped with prejudice, but I guess GoGo is trying to make everything right. So we'll see where this leads as they get more satellites up in the air. Now, this should come as no surprise, but John McAfee, well, he said he lied about the San Bernardino's shooter's iPhone hack. All he did was, you know, claim that he could unlock the iPhone just to get public attention. So, liar, liar, pants on fire. Maybe people won't be listening to him as much when he's bragging. Of course, I think we all kind of knew already this would not come as a surprise. But that's the very interesting John McAfee. There's a pretty cool article on CNET saying, here's what our sun will look like in 5 billion years. None of us will be around to have to experiment. Well, maybe some of our, 5 billion years, if you think about it, folks, let's be honest, 5 billion years from now, will we have been already recycled, we put in the ground, It seems to me that we would probably be dust by that point, right? but anyway, so it really won't matter what happens in 5 billion years. But they got a picture of our of a dying star, and they said, this is kind of what our sun's going to look like. So I don't think we have to worry about that. But yeah, it's hard to, can't even fathom that number, right? It's a huge number. Of course, you know, the government spends that kind of money every day, $5 billion. That's not a big number to the government. Have you got some old laptops laying around? Well, there's a way to turn that old PC into a speedy Chromebook for free. There's a step-by-step guide into making your old machine into a Chrome-capable computer. So that's pretty cool. So if you got some laptops, maybe you want to donate something to a school, maybe you can convert it and do that. So very, very smart. Doesn't take a lot of horsepower to run a Chromebook. And if you've got some laptops that are operational, you may want to convert a couple of them and donate them or, you know, give them to your kids to use. It's a little different way to manage computers in your home. Over in Fukushima, A total of 32,000 workers at Fukushima No. 1 nuclear plant had an annual radiation dose exceeding 5 millisieverts as the end of January, according to analysis of Tokyo Electric Power Company. A reading of 5 millisieverts is one of the thresholds on whether nuclear plant workers suffering from leukemia can be eligible for compensation benefits for work-related injuries and illness. Of those workers, 174, and hold on your hats here, had a cumulative radiation dose of more than 100 millisieverts, a level considered to raise the risk of dying after developing cancer by 0.5%. Most exposures appear to have stemmed from work just after the crisis in 2011. Hard to believe it's been 5 years. Again, the highest reading of any worker there was 678 millisieverts. So just to show that a lot of people have been affected just by working and trying to do the cleanup at Fukushima Nuclear Reactor Number 1. Google is, remember that challenge? It was Big Blue against a grandmaster chess person. Well, many of you probably have no idea what this game is called, or even what this game is, but it's called Go. It's a Chinese game. It's a board game. It's known through much of the world, but most, not very many Americans play Go. My wife's father knew how to play Go, and he tried to teach me, and it is as complex as it comes. You have to really, you have to use your brain in a big way. This thing is, you got so many multiples of moves, and anyway, so what they're going to do is they're going to put a Google Artificial Intelligence, Google DeepMind, up against the best Go player in the world. So this is going to kick off tomorrow, March 8th to the 15th, Google computer against this grandmaster, if you want to call it, world champion. It's called Baduk, B-A-D-U-K is kind of the official word, but Go is what most people know it by. So we'll see how this goes, but it's largely in Asia. If you want a mind bender on put your brain to some serious work, and you have to employ a little calculus while you're playing, this is the game for you. If you've never seen it, the link will be up in the show notes. You can check it out. I encourage you to go buy a board, and then you thought chess was hard. Oh man, this thing's at a whole nother. It was invented like 250 years ago, and of course the Chinese take great pride in being very good at it, being very, very good at it. Hey, Volkswagen has announced cheating on emissions in hopes of striking deal may miss the March 24th deadline. So it's been 6 months since Volkswagen admitted it lied to U.S. regulators, and they've been given a deadline. They don't think they're going to meet their deadline to fix this. So it'll be interesting to see if they get a reprieve as they're trying to put the fix in place. We'll keep you advised of that. Over on CNET.com's roadshow page, mandated car communications. You guys know that the federal government has mandated the car-to-car communications, and they're trying to get this going quickly. Of course, the U.S. mandate of having V2X technology in vehicles by 2019. Europe's going to implement mandatory emergency call services in cars by May of 2018. So this is using secure communication technology to talk between cars, talk to call back to the dealer or call back to the, you know, the manufacturer. So big boost. Once in a while you want to smack yourself in the head, because I had heard about a lot of this going on before, this mandating of this in-car communication technology, and I should have bought stock in the company that makes these things. It's probably too late. There might be a little bit of an opportunity yet. NXP and ST Microelectronics is one of the companies. So you may want to take a look at their stock. They're going to get a lot of business because of these mandates. So I'll have the link up in the show notes for you to check out. Google copyright takedown requests have jumped to 76 million in the past month. So a lot of stuff going on there. Lots and lots and lots. Hey, by the way, have any of you ever went after a domain name because of a trademark violation? If you have, if you had any success, would you email me? I'd like to talk to you. If you're a lawyer, that's fine too. I hope for you to give me a free consult. drop me a line, geeknews@gmail.com, all right? Star Trek and a lot of other movies are free to stream right now. A huge list of movies. I have those available. Of course, I've got the list of those leaving on March 31st as well. So if you're catching up on movies, and we have been, we just watched, I think, Star Trek 1. We are kind of going through and doing a little bit of, Star Wars. Oh, boy. I know it's not Star Trek 1, Star Wars, number one. So, we've been doing a lot of movie watching. Hey, Amazon, of course, this was maybe we didn't even talk about on the last show because they did a change of heart real quick, but Amazon's going to restore encryption to the Fire tablets after complaints. Amazon said its plans to restore encryption features on its Fire tablets after customers and privacy advocates criticized the company for quietly removing the security option when it released its latest operating system. They say we will return to the option for full disk encryption with a Fire OS update coming this spring, company spokesman. Right now, your Fire tablets are wide open if you've updated. The judicial branch has asked, there's been an appeal. As expected, federal prosecutors in an iPhone unlocking case in New York have now asked a more senior judge, known as a district judge, to countermand a magistrate's judge who ruled in Apple's favor last week. So we'll see how this works out. They filed a 121-page brief, so I'm sure we'll see a ruling on this in due time. You know, lots of people now are getting hurt because their head is down in their phone, whether it be driving in their car, walking down the street, walking off the sides of cliffs, doing selfies, all kinds of dumb things to get themselves killed. And actually, people dying by selfie is now making a top 100 list of how people die because, you know, people trying to get selfies in weird places and they're not paying attention and they get hit by a bus or whatever. So a young boy was at a baseball game with his dad, and apparently his head was down on his phone, and in a training game between the Pittsburgh Pirates and the Atlanta Braves, one of the batters lost control of the bat, and it went flying towards the boy's head. Now, luckily, the father was paying attention because he put his hand up, and I'm not kidding you, when you see these pictures, you're going to gasp. Dad deflected the bat. It spun around behind the kid and hit the people behind him, which were two adults. But Dad took a pretty good shot on the arm, but he saved this kid from taking a bat that would have hit him on the end right there. And we all know that, and what I'm pointing for, folks, is at the halfway up the nose, kind of at the bridge. You see this video. I mean, not the video. You see the pictures that was captured by a cameraman. And I'm going to tell you, this kid was lucky, and man, glad Dad was paying attention here because he probably saved his son's life. And this bat was close to this kid's head, and Dad got his hand out there fast. Another person had ducked, and it's a scary picture. So, and you're in a baseball game, and you're down around the batting cage, or even around the pitcher's mound. you know, you're in the play area. Put the doggone phones down. It was close. Really close. Good job on dad, really. All right, switching gears here. Virginia has become the first state to formally legalize daily fantasy sports. So Virginia today signed into law the Fantasy Contest Act. The bill outlining how daily fantasy sports sites like DraftKings and FanDuel can operate legally in the state. The law is the nation's first formal recognition of the industry after months of heated legal activity in multiple states. Of course, they're taxing it. And the fantasy sports sites must pay a $50,000 fee to operate in Virginia. They have to ensure people are 18 years and older. And I think they have to pay a percentage. So what they're really trying to do here is collect some money for the taxpayer. And, you know, rightly they should. Google has patched remote execution flaws in Android. Google's released 16 patches for Android, including one for a critical remote execution vulnerability. The company's Nexus device will receive an over-the-air update. Google's partners were notified no later than February 1st of the fixes, giving them more than a month to prepare. So expect some updates coming to your droids, all right? U.S. military is spending millions to make cyborgs a reality. The U.S. military is spending millions on an advanced implant that would allow a human brain to communicate directly with computers. If it succeeds, cyborgs will be a reality. The goal of the proposed implant is to open the channel between the human brain and modern electronics. According to DARPA's program manager, Philip Alvetta, in January, DARPA announced its plans to spend $62 million on the project, which is part of its Neural Engineering System Design Program. The implant would be small, no longer than 1 cubic centimeter, or roughly the size of 2 stacked nickels. The implantable device aims to convert neurons in the brain into electrical signals and provide unprecedented data transfer bandwidth between the human brain and the digital world. I kid you not. Now, soldier, step right up here. Step for your implant. This is not going to hurt a bit. And don't worry, this doesn't monitor when you're talking. This doesn't monitor when you're with your wife or girlfriend. This doesn't monitor while you're off base. This only works when you are at work. Ha, ha, ha. Wow. Yes, we're going there, folks. Yes, we are. All right, any of you programmers out there listening to the show? Software has bugs. This is normal. There's no such thing as zero defect. And I know that to be the truth. There's no such thing as zero defect. If you think you're going to write code that's zero defect, you probably have a sad realization coming. WordPress blogs will soon support Facebook Instant Articles. This is very, very curious. I'm very excited about this and what's coming. We'll definitely get Geek News Central lined with this. It's still no audio embed, but they're going to allow video embeds, which is interesting. Probably limited to 15 minutes, but has distinct possibilities here for getting the show much easier into the Facebook ecosphere, even if it's the video portion of the show. But I might start creating a audio portion of the show that is actually an MP4. Tricky, tricky, tricky. So we'll see. Google's Project Fi no longer requires an invitation to join. After nearly a year, Google's ready to drop the velvet ropes that have kept Project Fi off limits for most Americans. As of today, anyone in the U.S. can sign up for the simpler data-centric wireless service without requiring an invitation. If you're tired of your existing carrier charging for more data than you use, you can jump ship at any time. You'll need a Project Fi-friendly smartphone, which would be a Nexus 5X, 6, or 6P, or tablet, the Nexus 9, newer iPads, or the Galaxy Tab S. For this to work, however, Google is sweetening the pot by discounting the Nexus 5X to as low as $199 if you buy it at the same time you activate the service. So definitely check out Project Fi. Pretty good alternative. Pay as you go on your data. Apple's been rejected by the U.S. Supreme Court in an appeal in a $450 million ebook case. They will have to write a check. And the $400 million of that is going back to consumers. In China, the value of girls is well known worldwide that Chinese families always want a boy. And girls are not, frankly, valued as much. Sadly, this is the case there. And matter of fact, China's got some challenges in that there's not enough girls now. So they've opened up letting people have more than one kid because their population was going to be shrinking. So imagine you're a peasant, 19-year-old. You don't, you know, you don't have a very big education. You've had a child out of wedlock, and someone wants to buy your kid. Well, this kid sold his 18-year-old daughter to a stranger. The price, 23,000 won. Which is equivalent to approximately $3,500. With the transaction have took place in the city of Tianjin, which lies within the province of Fujian. The father had not managed to complete high school, and the mother being below the age of consent when the daughter was conceived, it certainly was a choice made due to financial considerations, as the father relied on the Chinese chat service QQ to perform the transaction. As for the buyer, he claimed that he bought the little baby girl for his sister. Now, let's be realistic here. There's a horrible, horrible, horrible black market for, you know, trading humans. And it's fully disgusting here, but this gentleman's been arrested. He's going to get 3 years in jail. Is the gal that had the baby, she's going to get a couple of years suspended. But people are desperate, and they're selling their kids. It's just sad. Did it via chat room. Simply incredible. So who knows? Maybe this person was buying a child to be adopted or trafficked. Who knows? Who knows? 18-month-old, probably, I would imagine, for adoption. Alaska Airlines is going to adjust a flight plan out of Honolulu tomorrow so passengers can see the eclipse. So the plane will depart at 2 p.m., which is 25 minutes earlier than usual. We're only going to have 2 minutes of eclipse here? Wow. So anyway, they're going to make that happen here. So I guess around, I don't have to look at the time, get that down. 2 minutes, not a big window. Google's hired the creator of 4chan. I've got a 4chan somewhere around here, 4chan icon or a character. But 4chan creator Chris Poole has been hired. He's better known as Moot. Has found a new home, and probably he's going to be working on Google Plus. So maybe he can get some life back into this thing. If you're a Snapchat fan, Snapchat thinks it will generate at least $300 million in revenue this year. And they didn't do very good last year, so we'll see. Also, there's some discussions out there on why cities are not collecting rainwater to be utilized in, like, flushing toilets and so forth. Well, people's houses aren't, you know, piped that way. You know, people's houses are piped with, you know, on city water or on a, they're not hooked to, you know, reservoirs on a roof. But I guess a new study done by an environmental engineer at Drexel University published in Resource of Conservation Recycling has revealed that 4 cities could collect rainwater on the roofs of their homes and use those for flushing the toilet and so forth. Which cities? New York, Philadelphia, Chicago, and Seattle. Because they get a lot of rainwater from, you know, around the season. So, interesting idea here. The way water's getting in California, they better put some this type of stuff in play in California, they're all going to be drinking dirt. Dropbox is boasting 500 million registered users. They need more paying users, obviously, but a lot of people are using the service, their free service. Good article on Engadget talking about the United States Air Force's new Cyber Weapon Command and their new cyber weapon, which hunts network vulnerabilities within the Air Force's own operational networks. So a little behind the scenes of some of the stuff that the Air Force is doing to try to beef up their network and protect it from attack. And finally, those of you that aviators out there, you're going to love this. And I'm well aware of how electronic systems work sometimes. You get the, you're operating a system and all of a sudden the software crashes. And you have to reboot the software in order to make the, not necessarily weapon system, but the sensor work again. Well, the F-35 has some radar software issues. It is equivalent of the blue screen of death. The multi-billion-dollar F-35 Joint Strike Fighter has run into another software bug, the glitch in the software that operates the fighter's radar, kind of an important thing for fighter aircraft. Apparently, the radar becomes unstable and forces the pilots to, reboot. They call it restart. It was rebooting. And apparently, the Lockheed Martin is now running a fix through its test labs, and a patch is due this month. But anytime you've got a system that is critical like that, you're doing a dogfight and the radar's running to, get a lock on an enemy target and you get the blue screen of death, would you be about as pissed off as you possibly ever could be? It's a life or death thing, You got a bead on a guy, the radar's locked up, and instead of, a tone for launch, you get from the, the computer goes tits up. Oh, my goodness. Amazing. Truly, truly amazing. All right, that's going to wrap it for regular content here today. Let me go and see what we have in the... Oh, I don't need to do that. Did I change a password? Why are you asking for a password? Okay, let's go over here and look at the date. The 4th was the last email. So let me look here. Oh, yeah, this came in on the last show. Got an email from Glenn. He says, you asked in one of your latest shows about recording family memories. I hope to retire soon, and one of my top priorities will be to write my memoirs. Both of my parents have passed away, and I often regret not asking them a number of questions. I think we are the first generation where writing your memoirs is practical for an average person, since doing so in the past with a typewriter or by hand just seems like too much work. So fire up Word and get writing, Glenn. Hey, Glenn, writing is, if you've got the time, more power to you. But I'm going to be honest with you. I would rather sit in front of a camera over a couple of weeks and really kind of share from the heart stories that you can remember. The older you get, the stuff that you've done in the past becomes more cloudy. So for those of you, let's just be straight up. For any of you that are young at this point, let's say in your 20s, and 30s that are listening to this, and I'm 51, I'm not a spring chicken, but things that stick out for me when I was in my 20s are kind of like highlights and highs and lows, and not the everyday stuff that turned me into the person I am today. So if you're younger, start recording memories now. And, keep it private, keep a private archive, and you can talk about intimate details, about relationships, you can talk about, and be careful with that type of stuff, especially if you're talking about prior girlfriends, obviously. But, talk about your wife, talk about your kids, talk about your kids being born, all that stuff that's such precious memories that as you get older, sure, I remember the birth of my children. Who can forget that? But when it's in the moment or shortly thereafter, there's just so much more emotion that goes along with it. That's the time to capture it so that, 20 years later, when you've got all this stuff, and it's like home videos, but it's deeper, right? So start writing your memoirs when you're young. You don't have to wait till you're old to do that. And if that means just once a year, sitting down with the camera and talking about what you learned last year, what happened in your job, your career, highs, lows, challenges, accomplishments, you name it. It's really going to make for a vibrant history for people in the future when they're searching on Ancestry.com and they find your stuff, right? So anyway, very, very cool. Or the equivalent thereof, or you pass the data down so they don't have to pay for Ancestry.com. I think there's a real opportunity for people to, even if it's just audio recordings, it doesn't have to be video, but you're going to have to keep that content current as you're getting older. You got to make sure as formats change that you update it. What a cool thing to be able to have on file 100 years from now. Okay, this is going to wrap me for today. And Glenn, thanks for that note. I do appreciate it. And love to hear from any of you that would like to comment on today's show. Geeknews@gmail.com. Twitter is @GeekNews. Next show, yeah, where we finally, we're going to make it to 1,100. Crazy, yeah? Took forever to get here. About 3 months longer than it should have. So hopefully it doesn't take us 14 or 15 months to get to the next 100. I hope you guys come and hang out with me. I'm not going to get too deep into a celebration. You know, most of you that have been here for a while have heard the story many times. If you haven't, go to the blog. Go back and listen to the Even Number shows and help me keep my memory square. Sometimes I have to go back and listen to show 100, 200, 300. I have to go back and do a refresher myself because, you know, we've already got 11 plus years of history here, folks. So crazy stuff. Geeknews@gmail.com is the email address. Thanks for hanging with me. We'll see you next time here on the Geekness Central podcast. Everyone take care and aloha.